My Mac Podcast number 116, sponsored by Small Dog Electronics.
Hooray!
Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
All right, before we get too far into the show, Robert Hazelrig sent in, he sent me an email request for a copy of our theme music. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, yeah, I can send you that. That's no problem. He said the newer one, the shorter one with the 3-2-1 yeah. intro and all that, plus the Kevin Reeves music. So mm-hmm. I sent it to him, and he was just messing around. And this is what he sent back, our theme as performed by Robert Hazelrig.
I'm sorry, that
using
that
nothing
again?
But...
Robert Hazelrig,
performed by nothing but his mouth, his voice. Okay, so here we go.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com podcast. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so that... I think Robert has too much time on his hands.
I think it's now official.
You know, though, honestly, though, technically speaking, that was pretty impressive. Because he had to lay down, like, at least, I would say, I think he told me it was like 12 different vocal tracks to do that.
Oh, did he do all that in GarageBand?
I got to turn you off speaker there, guy. Sorry. Yeah, he did it all in GarageBand. I'm very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. I almost peed myself when I first heard it. He's going wow,
wow.
That Robert, that was great, man.
Mm-hmm.
You are the man. So,
speaking of pee, I suppose we all.
Speaking of pee,
I did. I suppose we all read Steve Jobs' open letter. So
yeah, we'll get into that. I did want to say that I don't remember if we had. Made an announcement that we were going to have an interview this weekend with who, but...
No, we didn't.
Yeah, okay. It didn't happen, so...
But it has been rescheduled.
It
and
has
will
been
be
rescheduled. We will have...
What I'd like to know is how P reminds Chad of Steve Jobs' letter.
Yeah,
Well, just, you know, the fact that he's probably pissing off the record industry with this statement.
Maybe. Who wants to...
Well, that's esoteric.
Who wants to bring us up to date on the Steve Jobs DRM letter?
I say Guy, since he actually had that idea last week the week before last for a podcast. So,
Guy. Oh, I did. Oh,
do you want to bring us up to date on the letter?
Well, I haven't actually read the letter, which means then I that guess I would probably be the wrong person to ask. I mean, you can basically tell from what's been in tech news what it was saying he's saying according to what I've been reading, he's saying that. He would like to remove the DRM completely from everything that's sold as far as audio goes on iTunes.
Well, it goes farther than that. Steve Jobs basically says that the idea of DRM in the first place
failed, that
it wasn't Apple's idea. This isn't something that they ever really did want.
Mm-hmm.
The record companies insisted on it. He goes to point out that it really doesn't make any sense for Apple to license the DRM, the fair play to other companies, because they don't have control of the hardware. So if a bug is or a hole is discovered, which mm-hmm. this is an aspect that most people probably didn't know about, if a hole is discovered in fair play, Apple has a certain amount of time to patch that hole. Failure to do so will result in the record company pulling the music from Apple to sell. So how would Apple fix holes if they don't control the hardware? If they just license the DRM? They really couldn't.
Yeah.
Or either that or they'd have to lock it down as tightly as plays for sure.
As far as DRM, Apple's DRM for their music is pretty
tame. Relatively liberal. It's liberal.
Yeah, it is very liberal. I mean, you can play it on how many computers, you can burn it
five
how many
different
times.
Computers. Mm-hmm. You can burn individual tracks as many times as you want. You have to change the playlist around every once in a while, but you know, I mean, most people that are buying music on iTunes, they're going to burn it maybe once as a backup, or maybe a couple times for a different type of mix CD if they bother to do it at all.
And really, you can re-import it, so it's not like that it would be difficult to get around that DRM if you so chose. It's not that big of a deal, honestly.
Well, part of the problem with that is, though, is you're taking an already compressed file and converting it into a different format, and it's going to be compressed again, which seems to be the argument that a lot of people have about Fair Play, is that, you know, yeah, you can get around it, but you're going to end up with a file that doesn't even sound as good as the original, you know, 128 AAC file.
Correct. So Steve Jobs' idea that he's floating in this letter is to get rid of the DRM, because how much music is sold that has DRM compared to how much music is sold that does not have DRM that's already digital, i.e. CDs. It's
right.
Not even close.
Right.
So DRM really, it's not stopping piracy.
It's not
easy to get around. Just jump on LimeWire, do a quick search for any group you can possibly imagine, and you're going to find all their music right there.
Mm-hmm.
Easily downloadable, easily searchable.
No, if it has a file extension of EXE, you should probably stay away from it.
Unless you're on a Mac, then it really won't make a difference anyways.
Well, that's true.
But, yeah, I'm totally with Steve Jobs in his letter. I think he's 100. But, you know, here's the thing. Is it going to happen? Is the record companies going to read this letter and go, wow, you know what? Steve Jobs is right. Let's get rid of all this copy protection in our music and our content.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Not going to happen.
I don't think so. Nope.
Nope.
Come on, George. Nope.
Hello, is anybody home? But, yeah, it's... So what's the point in the letter? How about we talk about that? What's the point in Steve Jobs writing an open letter to every Apple customer?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that the whole thing with Norway is going on at the same time. I think that that Steve Jobs' letter is more a response to what Norway is saying as it is to, you know, people demanding that Apple sell DRM-less iTunes.
You really think Steve Jobs cares about Norway?
I don't know if he cares about Norway, but you can bet that if Norway takes it to the nth degree, and I don't think they will, that there would probably be other countries in the EU that might.
Let's be honest, DRM sucks. We all hate it.
Yes, it does.
You know, the next logical conclusion would be, okay, how about selling movies without DRM then, Mr. Jobs? That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because
what possible studio does Steve Jobs have any pull in?
Well, I don't even think that has anything to do with it. I think
that was sarcasm.
I know.
I
think, though, that, yes, music has been sold for a long time without DRM, but every DVD sold has DRM, Macrovision. Yeah. So it's not like you can go out and buy a copy of a movie non-DRM'd. You can't, unless you record it off the television. But you know,
yeah.
Well, the good old analog hole.
Good old analog hole. So,
and not to mention the plethora of programs that are available on both PCs and Macs that will completely strip out the Macrovision DRM.
Not that I know anything about.
That
Have either one of you guys watched the we've got this thing playing here in the background. Stop, you stupid computer. Have you guys watched the ads for Get a Mac?
Which one?
In England?
yes, I have.
Okay, Guy. Have you seen them, Chad?
I've heard a couple of them, but
I'm going to play one, Guy. So don't talk, because I'm going to turn the speakers on so the microphone will actually pick it up so Chad can hear this one. I personally like it a lot better than the American ones.
No.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Bless you. You okay?
No, I'm not okay. I think I've got that virus that's going around. You'd better stay back. This one's a humdinger.
Okay, I'll be fine.
Don't be a hero.
Last year, there were 140,000 known viruses for PCs.
PCs, not Macs.
I think I'm going to crash that.
Okay, well, if you feel that way...
I love that one.
And I'm a PC.
We have a lot in common these days.
We both run Microsoft Office. We share files. It's great. We just get along.
PC.
And I'm a PC.
Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah, sorry, I had to restart. You know how it is.
Not really.
Oh, what? Macs don't have to.
He waves his hand in front of his face.
I'm just going to get IT. Keep an eye on it.
I'm a PC. Where is everyone?
This is a really famous. Obviously, none of us are in England.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad we didn't have David Cowan on for the show.
Yeah,
but I guess it's my understanding that these guys are pretty famous in England.
Sure,
A pretty popular comic duo.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually did a search on YouTube and found just a ton of skits that they've done. Hilarious.
Yeah.
These guys are, they're so funny. I hope we get these shows in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with YouTube, we don't really need to, but
yeah,
I mean, it was so funny that I was like, this is hilarious. Is it just me, or we still got a guy on the speaker? Sorry, guy.
No, yeah.
The speaker's off now. Is it just me, or is anybody else kind of a little tired of the Get a Mac ads here in the States?
I'm not.
It's the Mac guy I don't like. He just seems so smarmy.
I've always liked, I don't really care. I've always liked, what's his name, Jason Long?
Yeah.
I've seen him in a couple different movies.
I like him as an actor, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think he comes across well in these commercials. The first few, I thought they were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But now he just seems kind of condescending and...
Well, have you seen the new one called Security?
Yes, I have. What's funny That's about great. It, though, it's the mm-hmm. PC guy is funny. You know, the Mac guy just is kind of, and he doesn't have any personality. That's what I don't like. But when you watch the UK ads, the guy who plays the Mac in the UK ads,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, anybody listening can just go to apple.com/UK/getamac, and you can watch the UK Get a Mac ads. Mm-hmm. The guy
yeah, and you, plays, you can also go to just Google English Mac ads, and the link will come up pretty fast.
Yeah. If you watch those, the guy who plays the Mac is so much better in the role than Justin is. He's just... I like him. He seems smart. He seems... I don't know. He just doesn't seem as arrogant, you know?
Must be the accent.
Yeah. No, it's not the accent. It's just his mannerisms. I like him better, whereas the U.S. ads, he just seems kind of... slouchy and I'm cool and I know it and kind of smarmy and I really haven't combed my hair today and I don't like it.
Tim is making a general statement. Cancel or allow?
Allow. Was that a test to see if I'd actually seen those commercials?
No. Just having some fun.
So Bill Gates was kind of on a anti-Apple, anti-Mac hissy fit this whole week, it seems.
Oh, yeah.
What in the hell is going on? You know?
I think he's just getting, he's probably just getting ticked off. Probably a lot of people in Redmond are getting ticked off at how much publicity. Well, for example, the Get a Mac ads are getting. They've been very, very successful. And, frankly, ad companies don't really care if you like them or hate them, just so long as you talk about them.
Well, no.
I'm sure it's a little frustrating for him to be out there pimping their biggest OS update /release.
Keeps talking about Apple.
In the last 4 years, and then Apple releases the Shuffle in 5 colors, and it gets bigger news. You know,
well, I don't think it's
an operating system they've worked on for 5 years.
I don't think it's that. I think that he sits down to do an interview with like Stephen Levy from Business Week, ostensibly to talk about Vista and the new stuff and blah blah blah, and. That's what Bill Gates is all ready to talk about. And Stephen Levy starts talking about, what do you think about the new Apple ads? What do you say to the people who say that everything in Windows
is a ripoff of OS X?
It looks just like everything Apple's had for a while now. And I think Bill Gates has just finally snapped. Well, if you guys just want to talk about how cool Apple is, and let's see who demonstrated what first. Who's stealing from who? Who? Macs get cracked every single day. Every single day, your Mac can be taken over.
month of Apple was Apple exploits. Or
He lost his mind. Mm-hmm. He completely just gone, man. I'm sure the whistle is going to pick up really well on the podcast. he lost his mind.
Maybe Apple should invest $150 million in the Zoom.
Ugh. You know, I saw a great post at the unofficial Apple weblog going to a CompUSA ad for the Zoom.
Oh,
if you buy the Zoom,
heard about that.
You get a $15 iTunes Music Store gift card. How sad is that? They're trying to sell Microsoft's product by selling a gift card for a competing product in store.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty... Have you guys seen the actual Zoom now?
Yeah.
They're not hard to find. Yeah.
No, they're not hard to find.
Any place they've been shipped to, there they are. Yeah.
So Apple did come out with the new Shuffles, and I've got to say I'm a little disappointed because I've talked about this in the past, that I got the girls, both the older girls got Shuffles for Christmas, and now they come out with the colored ones. They would have died for pink or orange or...
Yeah.
So.
But as Macworld showed, you know, there's no shortage of little colored covers for the previous gen, so I don't think it's really that big a deal.
I don't think so either.
Speaking of iPods.
Yes, sir.
I told you before that I had bought my wife a green second-gen iPod Nano.
Sure. And I remember very well.
She had been resisting doing anything with it, and I kept saying, well, why don't you plug it into the kid's iMac, which is where she typically uses the computer from.
Push her too much, and she's going to do something with it, all right, guy.
Yeah. Well, and finally last week, she said, okay, well, just show me how to do it then. It was like, well, okay, this should take about 30 seconds, and sat her down in front of the computer, put one of her CDs in, and then it came up right on the screen, you know, do you want to import this into your library? And she said, what now? I said, click yes. And then she did, and pretty soon, you know, I came home from work late last night, and when I had talked to her previously about it, she had about 100 songs that she'd gotten in there. I came home last night, she had over 500. She's already put like over 2 gigs worth of stuff. And she's like, it's just so easy. I said, well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah, once they get down that path.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the new content up at MyMac.com. Not Gullible posted a review of a USB 2.0 universal adapter, which is an older model. We've actually got a newer model review coming out from John Nemirovsky.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you've got an older hard drive that you need quick access to, but you don't want to put it inside your Mac, or consequently, if you don't have an inside bay, say you got an iMac or a PowerBook or something like that, and you just need to plug it in via USB without putting it in a FireWire enclosure, this is all you need.
The nice thing about this is that if you've got, you know, I've got a bunch of drives and external drives.
Yep.
And typically, when bigger ones come out, I'll run out and get a couple of them and then transfer everything over from the older drives. Well, there's nothing wrong, really, with the older drive.
Right. You got an old 40 gig hard drive. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right. So what this device really lets you do is you can, you know, if you've got something that you want to keep for like long-term storage, plug this darn thing in and put it on that and put it off in the corner.
Right. This is not a solution to use to, you know, permanently keep a drive mounted on your desk, because this is a raw hard drive sitting there.
Right.
Those suckers can get a little warm.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a great solution. I look forward to Nemo's review of the updated version.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie Yankolo has a couple of posts. Maxpiration number 71 goes all into the appearance system preferences.
Yep.
Very handy to know. And he's also got a thumbnails number 36 about Max Rule.
Yeah, I like that thumbnails.
That was a good one. I like that a lot. And I've also got a post up there, how we record our weekly podcasts. I get a lot of people that listen to the show want to know, man, it sounds like you and Chad and Guy are all in the same room. Well, Chad and I are here in the same room. Hi, Chad.
Hello, Tim.
Guy, however, is in Virginia. You're probably, what, about 800 miles away, Guy?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So how do we get Guy to sound like he's in the same room? So I go into that detail in this article, and hopefully some aspiring podcasters or current podcasters who are having problems with that will read it and figure it out pretty quickly and how we do it.
I like that picture that you posted with it, too. It looks familiar for some reason.
Yeah, you know what I'm looking at in that picture is Guy.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking at Guy in that picture.
That's why he's looking up.
Rick Stringer took that picture. We do talk about Rick Stringer quite a bit on the podcast. He's just a good friend of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of his podcast, Chad?
Variant Frequencies.
You know, I said that because he was on Skype just a few minutes ago, and I was going to go just grab him really quick and pull him into the show. But he got off.
He Skyped out already.
Probably a good thing, actually. Yeah.
What's the name of that series that he does on that show?
Which one? The Failed Cities Monologues?
Failed Cities Monologue. I love that series. I can't wait for the next one to come out on that.
I think
they're up to like episode 20 or 21.
That sounds about right, yeah.
I think that's a cool name, too. Failed City
Monologue.
That's cool. It's very creative. So that's all I got. Up on the blog side, we've got a post from Owen Rubin called Mac and a Prius.
Which is actually very cool.
Really cool article. He links to someone actually installed a Mac Mini in their Prius, hooked it up to the display, but not only just hooked it up to the display, the touch screen on the display will control front row on that Mac Mini. That's pretty cool.
Wow. And probably slightly illegal.
That's right.
Well, he did void the warranty probably, but, you know.
Yeah.
What, on the car or on the Mac Mini?
Both.
We talked about this on the last podcast. iTunes was not working with Vista. My understanding is Apple has released an upgrade for Vista users of iTunes. So hopefully it's working for those Vista users out there.
Yep.
I am not a Vista user yet. Yeah. Microsoft still hasn't sent their copy.
Mm-hmm.
They keep saying they're going to, but they just haven't.
Well, there should be plenty you can pick out from. So.
Well, I think they just want to sell as many copies before the dreaded Tim Robertson review shows up.
Yeah.
Got to sell
it's
as many.
It's all based on fear.
It's all downhill once Tim gets a copy. So we got a lot more coming up on the podcast today, and we're always looking for feedback. We're always looking for contributors. We're always looking for someone to call our Skype number and leave a message, and we can play it on the show.
And that number is 1-801-938-5559.
That's right.
Just like roll that right out.
He's been saying it for, what, a year now?
Yeah, I've had about a year of practice on it.
Well, I just remember the last time you guys, like, you were like, so, Guy, what is that number? I was like,
As a reminder, on March 10th, Chad Perry and myself, perhaps Guy Searle, looking more doubtful, but you never know, will be at the Apple Store in Grand Rapids, Michigan, doing a live podcast. One of the neat things that we're going to do at that podcast is called the Apple Quiz. Tell them what the Apple Quiz is about, Chad.
The Apple Quiz is a variety of questions of varying difficulty regarding Apple computers and Apple history.
Sounds like fun.
So, you guys should work something up with Keynote.
What do you mean?
Well, you just have like a Jeopardy board.
Oh, that
you
might
do like a Jeopardy board and click on a question.
Maybe. Yeah, that could be something that we can look into. We've definitely got the software that could do it pretty easily.
Yeah.
We've got a ton of stuff to give away.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some product from Microsoft. We've got some stuff from Griffin Technologies, which Chad and I are going to play with here in a little bit. Last week I did a little bit of a recording that I put in the podcast for the iTalk Pro from Griffin Technologies, recording it right on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Chad and I are actually going to step outside in the bitter cold of Michigan. And when I say bitter cold, I'm not exaggerating. It's very cold out there. We're going to take the iGriffin Pro or the iTalk Pro from Griffin Technologies outside and finish this podcast up, a little bit of a segment out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad's looking at me like, crap, I didn't know we were going to do that. I'm nice and warm. I don't want to go outside.
You know, with all this talk about Griffin Technologies, they might want to actually sponsor Guy Searle going to the Grand Rapids podcast.
We've also got some Wiley Publishing books.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bring the list with me of all the stuff that we're giving away, which is really bad.
Well, you went over most of that last week.
Of it last week, and we've got many more shows. But one of the neat things that we're doing, and it is official, and I kind of talked about it a little bit last week, but this is official. We're not giving stuff away just to the people in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who shows up at
the Apple Store.
At the Apple Store. What, it's going from 2 to 3:30, correct?
Mm-hmm.
2 to 3:30, March 10th. If you're in the West Michigan area, you're definitely going to want to show up because we've got just a ton of stuff that we're giving away. All the world
Or even within a 1 or 2 hour
It's going to be worth your drive. If you can drive 2 hours, if you drive 2 hours and show me your driver's license that show that you drove over 2 hours, I'm going to do everything I can to try to get you something.
Yep.
Something. Because we've got a ton of stuff. My wife is saying, when is this podcast going to happen so this stuff can get off my kitchen table? I have a lot of stuff, and I don't even have everything yet. There's more coming, which she really
wants her home
about.
Back.
She does, and I don't blame her. And I want to give this stuff away.
Well, we can move it all over here.
I want to keep it, to be honest.
Yeah.
This is some great stuff.
There is some very
crazy
great stuff.
Well, yeah. I did, just taking the retail price of what we already have, if you wanted to go out and actually buy this stuff, you know how much it's worth right now?
What is that total, Tim?
$2,350, give or take $10.
Holy cow.
Can you believe that? We're going to have almost $2,500 at the store alone.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the kicker. We're not giving stuff away just at the store. We are going to give away for our home audience, for the listener at home. I always wanted to do that.
Yes, it'll be the MyMac.com podcast home game.
That's right. It's the home game. So all you have to do, if you guys want to get in on the action, when Chad and I are giving stuff away, we'll either during the podcast say who the home winner of a certain prize is,
mm-hmm.
or we'll just simply talk about that the next week. But we'll probably work it into the show somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Have you
set up how people are going to actually contact
Absolutely.
Us?
Absolutely. Well, all they have to do to join, don't worry.
It's called a segue.
It's called a segue. Really? I can write a segue.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about getting spammed because of it. Just send one email with your name, address, and phone number to contest@mymac.com.
And that address again, Tim.
contest@mymac.com. And that's all you got to do. Simple. Then you're entered in the contest.
Sweet.
Can't tell you what you're going to win yet. We haven't figured that out. We're still contacting companies. In fact, John Nemo is working on that as we speak. Right now, diligently, John Nemo is at home, furiously typing on the keyboard. Thousands of companies send us free stuff so we can give it away.
Exploiting every contact in his address book.
That's right. So we got a lot more show coming up, so Guy and Tim and Chad has to get out of here now.
Well, actually, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about.
We're too freaking mad.
Oh, please.
All right, go ahead.
This
isn't about that burning itch, right?
No. I'll just save that for next week.
Okay.
Great.
Hopefully it'll be cleared up by then.
That's right.
Yeah, if you turn on your iCam, I'll actually show it to you. But never mind. I got a letter from Pat, who works for Washington Apple Pie, and she has asked me, and if I can talk Donnie into it, hopefully him as well.
Donnie.
To Donnie Yankolo. It'll be the first time I've met him. To go to the March general meeting for the Washington Apple Pie and do a kind of a podcast class.
Do you have any information on where the March meeting is going to be?
Yeah. Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me.
Well, you know what? Let's save it for next week and get all the details for us, Guy. And
alrighty.
We'll confirm with Donnie if he can do it. If Donnie can't do it, though, you're going to be there regardless, right?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there regardless.
So in March, Guy is going to be doing a podcast from the Washington, not Washington State, but like Washington, D.C.
area
user group. That ought to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You're going to interview some of the people that are there, show them how to do a podcast, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to them, and I'm sure somebody there at the Pi will have a wireless mic, which will make things a lot easier.
If not, just yell. You're really good at that.
Yeah, really, really loud.
You got a lot of practice with that in the September show that we did up at the Apple Store. We won't be doing that this time.
No.
This time we actually have a microphone that we'll be going out to the audience with. We'll hook it up to a PA system or at least some really nice speakers so everybody can hear. It's going to be a lot better. So that's the show. I shouldn't have ate the McDonald's before I came over. But I can't help it. I was starving because I almost died.
Then I'll close us out. That's the show for this week. Stay tuned for segments from David Cohen.
Maybe.
Robert Hasselrig.
Maybe. I haven't got that yet either.
And John Nemo.
Yeah, I do got that.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.
Hello. My name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration. My guide to using a Mac in a Windows world.
Now, welcome back to the show.
Welcome, listeners, to Fenestration segment number 23. I'm going to spend most of today's session talking about Virtual PC for Mac. But before I get to that, I'd like to update you on a couple of pieces of Windows virtualization news that I came across this week. Firstly, we've been aware for some time that Parallels does not support Direct3D. This means that you can't run 3D games or anything else that uses Direct3D within Parallels. VMware launched their Fusion beta at the end of last year, and it was expected that they were in pretty much the same place in terms of Parallels with 3D support. Of course, VMware Fusion is still a beta product at the moment, so as always with these things, you expect that features may change before the final release. What has emerged this week is there is, in fact, apparently a switch that can be enabled within VMware Fusion to turn on Direct3D support. And the first people who found this out have actually turned it on and found that it performs pretty well. Now, 3D support should be of interest to more than just the Windows gamers among us. If you have a burning desire to run Windows Vista, and you want to get the very best look to Windows Vista, then you need to have Direct3D support, because they have a new interface called AeroGlass within Vista that allows translucency, 3D Windows effects, and all sorts of other Microsoft eye candy. Now, all the current Intel Macs are capable of providing AeroGlass support with Vista, but not if they're run via virtualization. It appears that VMware have this particular user audience in mind with this feature, and it looks like they've built it in the beta, even though it's not quite ready for prime time yet. This is also a feature that Parallels have been promising to put into a future release of the product. We've not seen it yet, even in beta, but I'm sure now that this news is out that Parallels' programming team will respond with a Direct3D beta version. Parallels have released another beta of their release candidate for the latest version of the product. There are further refinements to the USB 2 support and the coherence feature that I've talked about previously. Now, I tried this one and I found it to be not quite as stable as the previous beta releases. I had some instances where my Windows sessions would not shut down after I'd finished using them. So, as always, I advise caution and make sure you've got full backups before you try beta software in the production environment. Now, my main topic of discussion today was Virtual PC 7 for Mac. Now, I've talked in the past about how I would recommend using older versions of Windows with Virtual PC in order to obtain better performance. But obviously, I appreciate that this might not be a perfect solution for everybody. You may want to have Windows XP running so you can do some testing, or alternatively, you may be looking to support a Windows XP user and need a session that looks pretty much like their machine on yours. So what can you do to try and speed up Virtual PC for Mac if you're running Windows XP? Well, it turns out there are quite a few things you can do that can actually provide better performance. Microsoft have provided an article that gives quite a few very interesting hints on how things might be improved with Virtual PC and Windows XP, and I'm just going to talk about a couple of them. Firstly, before you fire up Windows XP, it's important to get the memory settings right. And interestingly, if you provide more memory, you may not necessarily improve the performance of XP under Virtual PC. There is a table within the Microsoft document that discusses these improvements that actually specifies how much memory you should give to your Virtual PC environment depending on what you have in your computer. It's interesting to note from this document that even if you have more than 1.5 GB of RAM in your Mac, assigning more than 512 MB of that to Virtual PC for XP's use is not going to deliver any extra performance, and in fact may slow your machine down because it slows down the OS X side. Obviously, with Virtual PC, unlike Parallels, you are actually running a full software program that's emulating the entire PC. So if you slow down OS X, you're going to slow down the Windows environment at the same time. Some other interesting points to note are that if you can do without networking, USB support, or the dock integration that Virtual PC provides, turning off each of those settings before you start the XP virtual session will provide a performance boost. Once you actually get into your emulated Windows XP session, there are various things within Windows XP that don't play well in a virtual environment and can be turned off. The biggest thing, in fact it's highlighted in the document that switching this will make the biggest performance hit for Virtual PC, is to turn off the Windows XP normal style and revert it back to the Windows Classic style. Now, under Windows Classic style, Windows XP makes itself look much more like Windows 98 or Windows 2000, a lot of the Crayola-style graphics effects get turned off, and apparently this makes a massive improvement to the performance of the system. There are a variety of background processes that Windows XP supports that aren't really needed in a virtual environment and will slow the machine down. One of these is System Restore, which is a feature which allows you to roll back changes you make to Windows XP. Now obviously, under Windows XP in a virtual environment, it's very easy to completely back up the system before you make any changes, and I would recommend doing this rather than relying on System Restore, which has always been a little bit funky for me anyway. By turning this feature off, you can actually give yourself some performance and also some disk space within your virtual environment. The Microsoft document talks about a couple of other hacks and things you can turn off. It's worth mentioning as well that a bit of Googling will find you various pages where you can turn off all sorts of extra services within Windows XP that are running in the background. Now, in a virtual environment, you probably don't need an awful lot of these things, and if you turn them off, then they're not consuming processor cycles, and your Windows XP environment under virtual PC should perform a fair bit better. Naturally, I will provide links to this document and also to some of these other websites in the show notes for this episode.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.
That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hello, Robert Hazelrigg here. Today I would like to talk to you about some very cool products from Logitech. I am speaking specifically about the MX Revolution Mouse and the Denovo Edge wireless keyboard. Both of these devices are wireless Bluetooth devices, and both of these devices come highly recommended from me. The Revolution Mouse is more than a 5-button mouse. In fact, I think it has something like 15 programmable buttons on it. But aside from having a number of programmable buttons, it also has this new fantastic hyper-fast scrolling wheel. The scrolling wheel is very, very fluid. When you spin the wheel, it spins and spins, sort of like a gyroscope. It just keeps going and going. And if you're on a very long page of text or a long website, the page will flow along with the scroll of the mouse, which is very interesting. So what's different about this wheel is, compared to the other scroll wheels that I've used, as you move the wheel, the page moves at the same speed. So if you were just to flick the wheel really quickly, your page would scroll very, very fast. And as the wheel rotation slows down on the mouse, so does the scroll on your screen of the page. The other thing I really like about this mouse is the ergonomic fit to my hand. I'm very particular about my mice and the way things feel on my hand when I use my mice. And for the longest time, I have been using a Microsoft IntelliMouse, which fits my hand very nicely, but this one fits even better. I can easily say that it is the most comfortable mouse that I've ever had the pleasure of using. Now I'd like to tell you about the Denovo Edge, and that is the Bluetooth keyboard also from Logitech. It has a built-in touchpad, a touch-sensitive volume control, and just below the touchpad, it has a right and left click. The look and the feel of the keyboard is extremely nice. It's so nice that I would be even willing to keep it and store it in my living room had I a media center connected to my TV. I even like the stylish charging cradles that come along with this device. Yes, that's right, I said charging cradle. You do not need to insert AA, AAA batteries into either of these devices. I find very nice that I don't have to constantly replace them. However, it is a concern for me in the long run. Eventually, I know I will have to replace the rechargeable batteries that are built into that. But for now, I'm not going to worry about that. The charge on the MX Revolution mouse through my real-world testing has lasted me about 3 or 4 days on a full charge. Now, full charge is something that I set up overnight, and when I use this mouse, I do use it for at least 8 hours a day, so it does get a lot of use. The keyboard, on the other hand,
gets an amazing amount of use out of one single charge. I charged the keyboard once, and I believe that charge lasted at least 3 weeks. I still have yet to charge it up, and I'm still using the keyboard, which is very nice. The MX Revolution mouse retails for $99. If you shop around, you might find it for $79. Denovo Edge, however, retails for $199. Two things I would like to mention about the keyboard is, one, I did have to reprogram a couple of keys. In order to eject a CD on the Mac, I had to turn off Expose so I could use the F12 key to eject, and I also had to switch the Option and Command key in the keyboard control panels so they would function like they should on a Mac. If you're using a PC keyboard on a Mac, you would know that those two keys are reversed and need to be reprogrammed. Finally, I would also like to note that if you plan on using these two devices together, that the software for the MX Revolution mouse does conflict slightly with the keyboard. Now, this confliction does not interfere with any performance. Rather, it disables the touchpad and the volume control on the keyboard. This is not a bad thing. You can program the mouse to handle the volume control, which I did and like. And if you're using the mouse, you don't need the touchpad on the keyboard. Now, I've told you how much I like these two devices. But in practical use, do I really need a wireless keyboard and mouse? No. Do you need a wireless keyboard and mouse? I don't know. If I had a media center, the keyboard alone would be great. I wouldn't need the wireless mouse because it has the touchpad on the side with the right and left clicks built into it. So if I did stick a Mac Mini or some sort of media PC on my TV, it would function marvelously, and I would particularly like this keyboard and want to keep it. The wireless mouse, again, is something of a luxury. I have a wired mouse and a wired keyboard. Why do I need them to be wireless if I'm not sitting at a media PC across the room? And I really don't have a good answer for that question, but I will tell you, I do like the MX Revolution wireless mouse, and I do plan on continuing to use it. Well, that's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thank you for listening.
If you've ever wanted to do-it-yourself Mac projects, that does sound a little scary, doesn't it? But there's a new book by authors Jolie Ballou and Andrew Shallett, and it has an imprint of CNET McGraw-Hill. The title is Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects, 24 Cool Things You Didn't Know You Could Do. And we have author Jolie Ballou with us on the line. Nice to meet you, Jolie.
Nice to meet you.
Well, here's the most important thing we want to know. Why did you choose the do-it-yourself projects that you did? I mean, of all the things that you could pick in the whole world, how did you pick these 24 projects?
Well, I was the lead author on the book, and I created the table of contents, wrote the proposal, and put the book in front of McGraw-Hill and CNET. I chose the projects based on what I'd heard from Mac enthusiasts over the years, as well as what is new on the technological side of things, like being able to create your own video podcast. One of the things I heard a lot is that Mac users can't video conference with PC users when they're trying to use MSN Messenger. Of course, this is one of the projects I chose because I heard a lot about that from people that write me. One of the projects teaches how to do that with a third-party program called Mercury Messenger.
Well, I had never heard of Mercury Messenger before, so I'm definitely, I'm not saying I'm plowing through the projects, but I'm sort of easing my way into these projects. I mean, you worked very closely with Andrew Shallett, and I forgot to mention that this book is $25 U.S., £15 United Kingdom, and $30 Canadian for CNET do-it-yourself Mac projects. What's it like working with a remote collaborator such as Andrew? Who did what?
It's interesting. I've written quite a few books with co-authors, and in this book, basically I wrote the table of contents in the first half, and Andrew wrote the second half. Andrew has a lot more experience than I do in regards to advanced projects like creating QuickTime movies and using Automator. And I have more experience with the easier end-user stuff like configuring RSS readers using webcams and fine-tuning a music library. So it was pretty easy, me writing the table of contents. I got to choose a really, really smart guy, Andrew, and make him do all the hard ones.
Okay, so you split it up.
Yes.
And how was each individual of the 22 tutorials developed?
Well, we started by categorizing the difficulty of the project, and we decided what a user would need to do it. And once that was down, we did the project ourselves, and we wrote down every little detail. We did that by hand. We wanted to make sure every reader could do the project, no matter what their experience. And once we had finished each of the projects, then we were able to type it up and make sure that it was exactly perfect so that everyone could just walk through every little thing, even the advanced ones.
But did you take it down to your local user group and have 100 different people go through them? How thoroughly were you able to test each one for your different level of reader?
Well, I tried to do all of Andrew's projects, and he tried to do all of mine. And we both have different setups, Mac versions, Mac types, hardware, etc. So we're sure they'll work for just about anyone. We also read and edited each other's projects prior to going to press. Now, his projects were pretty difficult, and while I did the one on changing VHS tapes over to digital, now he didn't have the hardware and software to test that. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of, you know, we did the very best we could to make sure it worked for anybody.
That's good. So you had a very select focus group, but your
focus
group were people who were actually involved in the project itself.
That's right.
Which of the 24 are your favorites?
Well, I like converting VHS movies to digital just because I think everybody has a box of those somewhere. And they think it's, you know, really expensive and time-consuming to change those. But it isn't, and once you get started, you'll find that, you know, you're the go-to guy or go-to gal for, mm-hmm. you know, every relative that you've ever known.
No kidding.
I also like the creating your own radio broadcast that Andrew did and creating your own video podcast. Those are my favorites because I didn't know how to do that. And, of course, after reading Andrew's and working through it, it was very easy. And it's a lot of fun. It's really cool creating your own radio broadcast.
Well, it's nice to see a new imprint. I mean, CNET for our publication is a new imprint. And how closely did you work with CNET and our old friends at McGraw-Hill?
Well, CNET, not so much, at least not until the end. I went to CES and I had a book signing that was for this book, as a matter of fact, at CNET. And
just last month.
Yes, they had at CES, I'm sorry, and they had a huge booth, and they gave away the books. But before that time, I hadn't really worked with them. McGraw-Hill, we worked really closely. We had technical editors, copy editors, proofreaders. It's amazing what a book has to go through. I mean, first Andrew and I have to write the chapters, and then we switch those back and forth and work them out, and then we send them off to McGraw-Hill where they have, first of all, a technical editor that goes through it and sends it back. And then we go through it again. It goes back to a copy editor, comes back. Then it goes back to a proofreader and comes back. And then we have to read our own chapters again in a PDF file. So that's all McGraw-Hill stuff. From start to finish, we even ended up switching out a few of the original projects for different ones once we got into it. We decided, you know, maybe that project was a little too expensive or maybe it didn't work out like we planned.
Well, I mean, it is impressive because the book is loaded with bulleted items, numbered projects, text, screenshots, sidebars, tips. I mean, it's a grayscale book, but it's a very colorful presentation as far as the way you actually put it together.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the nice thing about writing for a publisher instead of trying to publish your own book, which I've never done, but writing for a publisher is great because the author just writes the words and takes the screenshots. That's what we did. And McGraw-Hill comes along and they have their whole, you know, their whole system going where they create the design, they create the cover, they put the layout together and everything. And all we have to do is make sure if we want it to be a bullet on the page that we match up with the template. You know, we use their bullet, so when the people get it, we want that to be a bullet.
So you just need to behave yourself and pay attention. At the end of the day, everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy.
Well, your name was somewhat familiar to me as a book reviewer, but I don't think very much to our readers. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, Jolie Ballou?
I've written about 20 books, and I've written on everything from Windows to Macs to Photoshop to Office 2007 most recently. One of my favorite Mac books that I wrote, besides this one, was a book I did called Degunking Your Mac.
Yeah, I've got one right here.
There you go. It teaches readers how to clean up their Mac and make it run faster, and what they can install third-party-wise to help them get more from it. On the other side of things, I live in the Dallas area and sneak out to play golf in the afternoons if the weather's nice. But I always make sure to take my BlackBerry with me so I can stay on top of my co-authors.
Yeah, I can vouch for that because you did respond to some of my urgent emails and it said sent from the BlackBerry.
Yes, it does. And I've got to get rid of that because people know I'm not home and not working. Then they know I'm on the golf course.
The book she just mentioned is called Degunking Your Mac, Tiger Edition, by Jolie Ballew. That's J-O-L-I-B-A-L-L-E-W. And that's from Paraglyph Press. I'll have all these links on our show notes. The cost for that book is $25 U.S., $35 Canadian. And the primary book we're discussing today on Book Bites Live here on the MyMac.com podcast is CNET Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects, 24 Cool Things You Didn't Know You Could Do, by Jolie Ballew and her co-author, Andrew Shallett. Well, since you mentioned Windows, we have to ask you that awful question. How do you divide your professional life between the Mac and the Windows world?
Well, to be honest, sometimes it's hard to know what to use. Right now, I'm writing a book on Photoshop from a Windows perspective, but I feel some of my audience will be using Macs, and I feel a little guilty for not having enough pages.
You should.
Those readers. Yeah, I do. But, you know, that's what the publisher wants. I like the look of my Mac, though, and I like the feel of it, and when I'm writing on it, I feel more creative. But like I said, last fall I was writing a book on Office 2007 for Microsoft, and it just doesn't bode well for using a Mac. I mean, I could run a virtual whatever, but you know, why not just write it on the Windows? Anyway, I have my Mac up and running all the time, and I do a lot of Photoshop work on it, and I love surfing the web on it. You know, with the same broadband connection, it's just so much faster. It's cleaner. I just like surfing the web on it. And I have a lot of photo projects. And, of course, I have my iPod and I have iTunes. And I, you know, you gotta have all that set up all the time. But I do love it when I get to write a book for my Mac, on my Mac. That's really special because I get to work on the Mac, write about the Mac, and that's what I really like. But, you know, like I said, sometimes you got to write a book on Office 2007 for Microsoft Press, and there you go.
That pays the bills.
Pays the bills.
You said the name of our publication, which is My Mac, and this is Book Bites Live on the MyMac.com podcast. And we're concluding our interview with author Jolie Ballew, the author of Degunking Your Mac, Tiger Edition, and CNET Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects. Thank you so much for joining us, Jolie. We wish you all the best in your writing, and we'll definitely keep in touch with you.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.